Awareness seeped back into Lupo's brain and brought with it pain and fear. He knew he had been the worst kind of fool. He had been making his plans, scheming to double-cross Gray and take over the gang, when all along Gray had been using him, setting up a double-cross of his own. He lay sprawled uncomfortably on a hard-packed dirt surface, his arms tied behind his back. He opened his eyes and realized he was in one of the plantation's old barns. The big, drafty building was slowly rotting away, but it was still intact for the moment. They had taken him out there because Gray didn't want to get blood on the floor of his study, Lupo thought grimly. A lantern hung from a nail in one of the beams holding up the hayloft. Its harsh light spread over a circle that held Gray, Brattle, and Morel. Lupo saw a couple of saddled horses waiting patiently behind them.
I'm sorry, Quinn. That head of yours has taken quite a pounding in the past few months, hasn't it?
You son of a bitch.
There's no need to take that attitude simply because you were outsmarted. These things happen. A man figures the odds as best he can and then makes his play. It just so happens I figured them a bit better than you.
You, it set me up. You planned all along to double-cross me.
Of course. And as a matter of fact, we made an excellent team while it lasted. You're a very good bank robber, Quinn. But the reward for you is high enough now that you're more valuable to me in other ways.
How do you plan on collecting? You can't turn me in. I'd tell the law about you.
Well, of course you would. That goes without saying.
So you'll have to kill me.
I'm afraid so.
How will you collect the reward? You're an outlaw too.
Ah, but no one knows that. I could ride into the nearest town with your body and claim the reward myself. No one would ever be the wiser. But that might make the authorities curious about me, and I'd prefer they remain completely unaware of my existence. Same goes for Brattle here.
Lupo's gaze darted toward Morel.
But this man...
He's a bounty hunter. The law is already quite familiar with him. And no one will think twice when he brings in the body of a fugitive wanted for murder, bank robbery, and breaking out of prison.
Get it over with.
What? You're not going to beg for your life?
If you're going to kill me, go ahead and kill me.
Well, you might as well oblige him, Angus.
Morel drew the black Colt on his hip and pulled back the hammer. Lupo wanted to glare furiously at the killer, but he couldn't do it. He closed his eyes.
I'm sorry, Katie.
Wait, what did he...
Let me make sure I've got this straight. You want to send me to prison?
Captain John R. Hughes looked solemnly across the desk at him.
That's right, Mr. Morgan.
No offense, Captain, but you've gone loco.
No, sir. I'm completely serious.
Culhane had explained to the kid that Captain Hughes was the commander of Company D, Texas Rangers, part of the famous Frontier Battalion that had brought law and order to so much of the far-flung state. They were sitting in Hughes' office in the adobe building that housed the battalion's headquarters.
Maybe you don't understand, kid.
Oh, I understand, all right. It's pretty plain. You want to send me to prison so I can get shot in the head.
That's what happened to Quint Lupo. The idea is to keep it from happening to anybody else, and to round up the outlaws behind the scheme.
You don't know there actually is a scheme. You said the reason that fella Lupo was behind bars to start with was because he was a bank robber.
And a good one. Or maybe I should say a talented one. I'm not sure there is such a thing as a good bank robber.
The kid wanted to get up and walk out of the captain's office. He wished he hadn't let Culhane talk him into going there in the first place. But now that he was, he didn't want to get Culhane in trouble with the boss ranger.
All right, I'll hear you out, Captain. But I've got a special dislike for the idea of going to prison, especially when I haven't done anything to deserve it.
Yes, I understand. I did some checking into your background after Sergeant Culhane came up with this idea, but we'll get to that. Let me finish filling you in on the facts as we know them.
Go ahead.
Hughes glanced down at the documents on his desk.
5 years ago, Quint Lupo was arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to a term of 15 years in the state penitentiary on numerous charges of bank and train robbery. The record shows that prior to his arrest, no one was ever killed during the commission of one of his crimes.
Well, we don't have any evidence to show that he ever took a shot at anybody.
All that tells me is he planned his robberies well enough he didn't have to shoot anybody.
That's how it appears. And except for a few minor scrapes of the sort that occur all the time in prison, he stayed out of trouble while he was at Huntsville. Until he provoked a fight with another convict and wound up in the infirmary.
Which you think was deliberate?
Well, it looks like it. That ain't necessarily the same thing.
While Lupo was in the infirmary, he and three other convicts made an escape attempt. They murdered a guard, a Sergeant Alonzo Flynn, and slightly injured two others. They made it outside the walls of the prison, but were pursued by a guard detail led by Corporal Bert Hagen. The other three convicts were shot down by Hagen and his men, but Lupo gave them the slip and got away in the woods.
Men have broken out of prison before.
Yeah, but that ain't all of it.
Hughes shifted around some of the papers on his desk and picked up another document.
Lupo dropped out of sight and wasn't spotted until a couple of weeks later, when half a dozen outlaws held up the bank in LaGrange. They were all masked, except for Lupo, who was recognized by one of the victims. That man wound up being killed when he pursued the robbers outside the bank, but he identified Lupo in the hearing of several other witnesses before the shooting started.
Wait a minute. Lupo was the only one who wasn't wearing a mask?
That's right. Two men were gunned down during that robbery, and another, the bank president, died of a heart seizure.
That doesn't sound much like the jobs Lupo pulled before.
No, it doesn't.
When Rangers questioned some of the folks who were in the bank that day of the holdup, they said that Lupo wasn't the one who killed those fellas. He waved a gun around, but he didn't shoot.
All right. Go on.
Over the next couple months, Lupo turned up at several more robberies, including stopping a train and looting the express car over by Seguin. Three more men were killed in those crimes, and one was wounded.
Did Lupo do any of the shooting?
Not as far as we've been able to determine.
So probably what you've got is a fella who didn't like killing when he started out, but hardened up while he was in prison and threw in with some trigger-happy hombres after he escaped. You could explain it that way.
And no one would doubt it for a second. Just like no one lost any sleep over it when a bounty hunter named Angus Morrell brought in Lupo's body a couple weeks ago. He'd claimed he'd been trailing the gang and caught up to him while Lupo was away from the other outlaws. Morrell shot and killed him and collected the $15,000 reward on his head.
Bounty hunters bring in fugitives all the time. There's nothing unusual about that.
No, and this man Morrell is well known to the authorities. Lupo wasn't the first wanted man he'd brought in, not by a long shot.
So what makes Lupo's case different?
It's not the differences, but the similarities. 6 months ago, Angus Morrell brought in the body of an outlaw named Henry Bedford. A few months before that, Bedford escaped from the penitentiary, where he was serving a term for several bank holdups.
Let me guess. After breaking out, Bedford turned up leading a gang of robbers, only they were all masked and he wasn't.
Daggummit, Captain, I told you this young fella was smart.
You're right, Mr. Morgan, that's exactly what happened. Then Morrell tracked Bedford down and killed him, earning himself $10,000 bounty in the process.
Is there more?
One more case. Last year, another bank robber named Lou Talbert escaped from prison and took part in another series of holdups in which he was positively identified. Eventually, Morrell brought his body in and claimed an $8,000 reward for him.
The payoff's going up every time.
That's right. So you can see where all this is leading us, Mr. Morgan.
It's not leading me to volunteering to go to prison, that's for sure. I had enough of that over in New Mexico territory.
Yes, I've got a report here about how you were locked up in Hellgate Prison because of a case of mistaken identity. You were identified as an outlaw named, Bledsoe, was it?
Ben Bledsoe. Bloody Ben, they called him, and he deserved the name.
And that matter was cleared up. There were no charges against you in New Mexico territory or anywhere else.
Maybe not, but I spent more than enough time behind bars in that hellhole. I'm not anxious to go back.
Oh, Huntsville ain't like that Hellgate place.
It's still a prison.
It's our belief there's an organized gang breaking these men out of prison, forcing them to take part in bank robberies, and then killing them for the bounty once the price on their heads has gone up enough to make it profitable. In order to do that, they'd have to be working with someone inside the prison. We want to put our hands on whoever that is, as well as the mastermind who's orchestrating the whole thing.
You don't have any proof that that theory's even right.
No, we don't. But that's where you come in.
No, that's where I go out. I think you may be onto something, Captain. I have to admit that. But the plan's still loco.
It could work. We can't put a ranger in there because there's too much of a chance one of the convicts would recognize him. But you're not a lawman, Mr. Morgan, and you haven't spent that much time in Texas. You could get away with it.
I'm not an outlaw either.
No, but Waco Keene is.
Who in blazes is Waco Keene?
You are, if you agree to help us.
He ain't real. Or rather, he was, but he's dead now. A deputy sheriff up in Comanche County killed him the other day when he tried to rob a store in Gustine. Thing is, not many folks know about it yet.
So he was a bank robber?
Not exactly. He and three other men stopped and held up half a dozen trains in various places around Central Texas. The other members of the gang were killed last week when a posse caught up to him. Keene got away, but he had been dodging the law on his own ever since and was pretty desperate. He tried to shoot it out with that deputy sheriff and lost.
I suppose I happen to look like him?
No, not at all. He was a scrawny little fellow with dark hair, not a big strapping hombre like you. But that doesn't matter. As far as anybody inside the walls at Huntsville would know, you'd be him. Nobody he ever rode with is locked up there.
As far as you know?
As far as we know. The plan certainly wouldn't be without its risks.
And I'd be the one running them. No thanks.
The kid put his hands on the arms of the chair and pushed himself to his feet.
Mr. Morgan, I can't order you to do this.
You certainly can't.
But from what I know of you, you're the best man for the job. You stand a better chance than anyone else of getting on the inside of this gang and helping us bring them to justice.
I'm sorry, Captain. I mean that. But I have no interest in going back to prison for any reason.
Mr. Morgan.
It's all right, Sergeant. Mr. Morgan certainly has every right to refuse.
Hughes stood and extended his hand across the desk.
Thank you for coming in and hearing me out.
The kid shook hands with him.
I hope you find somebody who works out better than I did.
Culhane followed the kid out of the office.
Dang it, kid.
There's no point in arguing with me, Asa. My mind's made up. You can satisfy my curiosity about something, though.
Well, I ain't sure I want to, but what is it?
If you and the captain are right about there being some sort of mastermind behind this, it's a pretty complicated scheme. A lot of things would have to go just right to make it work. But if they did, it would be really hard to detect. What made you suspicious about it in the first place? It's not the sort of thing that would jump out at anybody.
Are you saying we're too dumb to have figured it out our own selves?
No, I'm saying you wouldn't have had any reason to think about it if somebody hadn't tipped you off.
Well, that's true, I reckon. Somebody did just about talk my ear off, and then the captain's ear, too, trying to convince us she was right about it.
She?
Yeah, that's right. You see, Quint Lupo had a daughter. Catherine's her name, and she's plumb convinced her old bank-robbing pa was murdered.
By the time he got back to the Minger Hotel, the kid hadn't changed his mind about accepting Captain Hughes' proposition, despite what Culhane had told him about Quint Lupo's daughter being convinced her father had reformed while he was in prison. What daughter wouldn't want to believe that about her father? The idea of voluntarily going back to prison just wasn't acceptable to him. As he walked up the stairs to his room, the kid recalled how a few years earlier his own father, Frank Morgan, had wound up pretending to be a prisoner in Yuma Territorial Prison out in Arizona in a deadly charade designed to find out the location of a cache of stolen bank money. That memory made the kid feel a twinge of guilt. Frank had taken on that dangerous job as a favor to him. Conrad Browning owned a substantial stake in that looted bank. It didn't matter, he told himself. He hadn't known Quint Lupo, and he didn't know anybody in LaGrange or any of the other places where Lupo's alleged gang had robbed a bank. He certainly didn't know Lupo's daughter, Catherine. He unlocked the door of the room and went in.
I'm back.
Then he stopped short just inside the door. Lace was gone, and so were her things. He should have been expecting it, he told himself bitterly. He should have known better than to think once her mind was made up, she would stay around any longer than she had to. She wouldn't want to give him a chance to talk her out of lighting a shuck for Del Rio and that fugitive she was after. He hurried down the stairs and crossed the lobby with long strides.
Have you seen Miss McCall?
The vehement question made the slick-haired gent look nervous, but he took a small envelope from under the counter and held it out toward the kid.
Well, she departed a while ago, Mr. Morgan. She asked me if I would give you this note.
The kid snatched the envelope out of the clerk's hand. As the kid stalked over to one of the windows where the light was better, he ripped the envelope open, in his anger not being too careful about it. Lace's handwriting was bold but feminine.
Sorry to end things like this for now, kid. I thought it might be easier this way. I know you're already thinking about charging after me and giving me a hand tracking down Jake Cisneros, but I'd take it as a personal favor if you didn't. This is my job, not yours. We'll run into each other again one of these days. Until then, Lace.
His first impulse was to clench his hand on the card and crumple it, but he knew he might regret it later. He slid it back into the envelope and tucked it away inside his coat. She was right about him coming after her, though. If she was bound and determined to be a bounty hunter, she'd just have to put up with a partner. He wouldn't take any cut of the rewards, of course, since he didn't need the money, and she did. And she'd probably wind up hating him for horning in. It would be a blow to her pride, and that was one thing Lace couldn't stand. On the other hand, he already missed her. The pang of it was like a knife in him. As he turned away from the window, he saw the clerk pointing across the lobby at him. The man was talking to a slender young woman in a gray traveling outfit and hat. Her blonde hair was pinned up in an elaborate arrangement of curls under the hat. Clearly, the clerk had just pointed him out to her. The kid tensed. He already had enough on his mind without more trouble, and he could tell by looking at the woman that was exactly what she was. He even had a pretty good hunch who she was. She nodded her thanks to the clerk and started across the lobby toward the kid. He glanced at the doors of the hotel. The only way he could reach them before she cut him off was by making a dash for them. He wasn't going to make a run for it across the Minger's lobby just to get away from a young woman. She was a very attractive young woman, too, not that that changed anything. Her face was lovely, and even at a distance, the kid could tell her eyes were a brilliant blue. He still didn't want to talk to her. But it looked like he wasn't going to have any choice in the matter. She planted herself in front of him.
Mr. Morgan?
You know I am. That fellow at the desk just told you I was. And you'd be Miss Lupo?
That's right. Imagine Captain Hughes told you about me.
Actually, it was Sergeant Colhane.
Sergeant told me the two of you are friends.
Not good enough friends that I'm willing to go to prison just because he asks me to.
We shouldn't be talking about that here. There are too many people around.
Doesn't matter. I'm sorry, Miss Lupo, but I can't help you.
You mean you won't help me?
Call it whatever you want.
It's not so much about helping me. It's about restoring the reputation of... Well, I suppose you can't really call my father an innocent man.
Since he was behind bars for bank robbery and holding up trains, I reckon not.
My father never denied what he'd done. Once he was caught, he was willing to serve his time. But he'd been in prison for 5 years, Mr. Morgan. And every time I visited him during those years, and in every letter he wrote to me, he made the same promise. That once he had served his sentence and been released, he'd never break the law again. I believed him then, and I still do.
Of course you do. He was your father. And for your sake, I'm sorry about what happened to him, by the way.
But you don't think I'm right about him.
Look, maybe we shouldn't stand here in the middle of the lobby talking about this. Why don't we go in the dining room, maybe get some tea?
All right. I'd like to explain.
It won't do you any good, but I'll listen.
They went into the Minger's well-appointed dining room and sat at a table in the corner. A waitress came over, and the kid ordered tea. He hadn't managed to get any dinner before he went with Colhane to the headquarters of the Frontier Battalion, but with Lace gone, he wasn't particularly hungry.
Captain Hughes told you about what happened to my father, I suppose.
That's right.
You probably don't believe that he wouldn't have broken out of prison unless he was forced to.
Being forced is not something that happens very often, or ever.
You don't know that. But even if you don't believe that, you can believe this. My father would never, ever kill anyone. He just didn't have it in him. Why do you think he was able to carry out all those other robberies without anyone ever getting hurt?
Some of that could have been luck.
No, it was because he never wanted anyone to get hurt. He was a good man.
Except for stealing other people's money.
For a second, the kid thought Catherine was going to stand up and slap him. He probably had it coming, he mused. He wasn't being very nice to her, but he didn't feel very nice.
I'll admit that he had a few moral shortcomings, I guess you could call them, but he wouldn't have killed that prison guard.
Maybe one of the men who broke out with him was responsible for that. They may not know exactly what happened during the escape.
One of the guards, Corporal Hagen, swore that he saw my father stab Sergeant Flynn. He's lying, Mr. Morgan.
Why would he do that?
The question was barely out of his mouth when a possible answer suggested itself to him. Hughes had said the Rangers suspected the gang was working with at least one person inside the prison, probably more. The guard Hagen could be part of the scheme, he thought. In that case, if the Rangers and Catherine Lupo were right about her father being forced to escape against his will, it made sense Hagen would lie about Lupo killing the other guard. That would give the gang even more of a hold over him. In spite of himself, the kid found himself thinking again about everything he had heard and realizing there was a good chance Hughes, Colhane, and Catherine were right. Catherine watched the kid's thought play across his face and smiled.
Now you're beginning to understand, Mr. Morgan.
The kid frowned. He understood, all right, but that didn't change the facts of what they wanted him to do. The waitress arrived with their tea. They sat quietly for a few moments, sipping from the delicate china cups. Catherine placed her cup on the accompanying saucer.
I know it's not fair. The Rangers are asking you... I'm asking you to risk your life. You didn't know my father, and you don't know me. You have absolutely no reason to be willing to run that sort of risk.
I don't like outlaws. If what Hughes told me is true, this is a pretty vicious bunch. They're responsible for the deaths of quite a few people.
Yes, including my father. I'd track them down myself if I could, Mr. Morgan, but that's just not possible.
You'd stand out pretty good in the penitentiary, all right.
When Sergeant Culhane first came up with this idea, I told him and Captain Hughes I didn't want them to do it. I wasn't going to ask a stranger to put his life on the line simply to get justice from my father.
Well, that's not the only reason to do it.
Perhaps not, but it's the reason that matters the most to me. Sergeant Culhane assured me things would be arranged so that whoever went into the prison would have help. They would have ways of communicating with you and stepping in if the situation became too dangerous.
That sounded good and might be reassuring to Catherine, the kid thought. But he knew how quickly things could change once a fellow was in the middle of a fight. All the plans in the world might not be enough to save him if his luck deserted him at the wrong moment. But that was true of just about everything in life, he reminded himself. Anything could happen at any time. The tragedies that had dogged his own life the past few years were proof enough. A man would go loco if he thought about it too much. So the choices facing him were simple ones, at least on the surface. He could ride after Lace and risk making her so angry at him she'd never have anything to do with him again. He could sit in San Antonio and drink and brood, maybe gamble a little like the bored rich man he used to be. He could go back to Boston or San Francisco and actually resume the identity of Conrad Browning again, something he had sworn he would never do. Or he could go along with the Rangers' plan and maybe wind up dead. But if he didn't wind up dead, he might be able to get to the bottom of the mystery and put a gang of brutal killers out of business. That would be a good thing. And so would taking some of the pain out of this young woman's eyes.
Tell you what I'll do. I'll talk to Culhane again.
I didn't expect to see you again so soon, kid.
Someone came to see me at my hotel.
The girl?
You didn't put her up to it, did you?
No, sir, I did not. Well, I knew she'd been here and talked to the captain, and I figured he told her you said no to the idea, but that's all I know about it. Captain Hughes wouldn't have sent her to beg you to help, neither. He ain't got an underhanded bone in his body.
That's the impression I got, too. Miss Lupo's really determined to clear her father's name, at least as much as that's possible considering his history.
Well, you can't blame her for feeling that way about her pa.
Same thought occurred to me.
Well, let's go over to Captain Hughes's office and talk with him.
Sounds good.
Hey, the kids had second thoughts about our plan.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but I'm willing to discuss it some more. Miss Lupo said you had some ideas about how to cut down on the danger for the man who goes into the prison.
Miss Lupo came to see you?
She found me at the Manger Hotel.
I didn't send her there, Mr. Morgan.
That's what Sergeant Culhane told me. I believe you, Captain.
Well, in that case, sit down, and we'll talk about this.
Well, we'd have to keep who you really are mighty quiet, since we figure somebody inside the prison is working with the gang, and we don't know who.
Just about the only person who's above suspicion is the warden.
You're sure of him?
I've known Preston Jennings for more than 20 years. He's incorruptible.
Go on.
We'd let Jennings know who you really are and that you're working with us. We'll leave it up to him to tell one subordinate he trusts.
Just in case something happened to the warden, we wouldn't want you to wind up getting stuck behind bars for any longer than you had to be there.
I wouldn't want that either.
Other than that, though, everybody inside the prison would believe you're actually Waco Keene, the train robber.
None of the convicts in there know Keene well enough to recognize him?
We can't rule that out entirely, of course, without checking the background of every single prisoner, but the chances of it are slim. Keene's never been in prison. He was locked up a few times in local jails, but those are the only times he's been behind bars. And all the men who rode with him on his holdups are dead. All the paperwork will say you're Waco Keene, and I don't think anyone will challenge it.
Sounds like this Keene was pretty small time. And he wasn't even a bank robber, not like Lupo. What makes you think the gang will find him an attractive enough target to go after?
Keene was beginning to develop a reputation as a desperado. We can make it even stronger by spreading the word he was responsible for a number of robberies he really didn't have anything to do with, and inflating the amount of the rewards that were offered for him. A prison is like any other community, Mr. Morgan. To a certain extent, it lives on gossip and speculation. Also, we know Lupo took part in at least one train robbery after he was broken out of prison. The gang doesn't limit themselves to bank robberies. Anyway, Waco Keene is the one who's conveniently dead right now.
It sounds like you might be able to pull off that part of it. But if I found myself in trouble, the guards wouldn't help me. They'd believe I was Waco Keene, too.
Well, you'd have to be able to take care of yourself. That's certainly true. But if you found yourself in such danger the plan had to be abandoned, you could ask to see the warden. He'll know who you are.
The guards might not let me see him.
The plan has risks. I won't deny that.
So what you're saying is it would be up to me to stay alive in there until the gang comes to bust me out, or until you give up on the idea. How long's that going to be? Lupo was in there for 5 years before they recruited him, remember?
They've been making a move about every 6 months. It hasn't been that long since Lupo escaped, but we're hoping they're starting to get greedy and will make their next move sooner.
Owl hoots usually do get greedy.
Let's say it works and they break me out of there. What happens then?
We'll be keeping an eye on the prison, and with any luck, we'll be able to follow them. We wouldn't want to close in on them just yet, though. We wouldn't be able to charge them with anything except the breakout. To get proof of everything they've done, you'd have to be part of their organization for a while. Once you've found out as much as you can, you get word to your contact, and the Rangers will move in and grab them.
What contact?
We'll have a man stationed somewhere close to the gang. He'll signal you so you'll know where to look for him. After that, he'll wait for your signal, and when he sees it, he'll alert the other Rangers.
The kid thought it all over, and then slowly shook his head.
Sounds like there's an awful lot that could go wrong.
Of course there is. And if it does, you could easily wind up dead. I won't try to deny that. But it's the only way we can think of to find the people who are really behind this.
If you're even right about it being some sort of gang. Maybe you're wrong about Lupo, and his daughter is, too.
In that case, nothing will happen. And in a few months, we'll pull you out of the prison.
A few months?
I don't think that's how it's going to turn out. I think we're right about the gang.
The kid thought there was a good chance the Rangers were right, too. And from the sound of it, they had devoted quite a bit of planning to the idea and would try to protect their inside man as much as they could. In the end, as Captain Hughes had said, it would be up to the man masquerading as Waco Keene to stay alive while he was behind bars.
What do you think, kid?
I think I'm a damned fool to even be here.
Does that mean you're gonna do it?
He looked at Colhane and Hughes.
Say howdy to Waco Keene.
The kid spent the rest of the afternoon in Hughes's office going over the plan with the two Rangers. It would take several days to get everything ready. Hughes asked the kid to stay in San Antonio during that time and not draw attention to himself.
Well, that won't be hard. I'll lie low at the hotel.
When we're ready, Sergeant Colhane will come and get you. There's nothing unusual about the Rangers delivering prisoners to the penitentiary, so he'll take you there with several men as an escort.
You want whoever's keeping an eye out for new targets to believe that Waco Keene is a dangerous man. Is that it?
Exactly. You'll have a reputation to live up to, Waco Keene.
That wouldn't be anything new, the kid reflected. For years, he had walked in the shadow of Frank Morgan, the famous gunfighter known as the Drifter, and he had his own reputation as a fast gun. A reputation he had largely invented in the beginning to help him track down his wife's murderers. As it turned out, real life had more than lived up to those dime novel exploits. By the time he left Ranger headquarters and returned to the Minger Hotel, his stomach was reminding him he had skipped the midday meal. He stopped at the desk.
Can you have some supper sent up to my room?
Of course, Mr. Morgan.
Any messages? Anybody been around looking for me?
No, sir.
The kid nodded and started up the stairs. Just as well, he told himself. If Lace had returned, it would have ruined the plan hatched by the Rangers. He wouldn't have been willing to go through with it then. He needed to focus all his attention on the dangerous job facing him. When he reached the room, he turned on the gas lights, since dusk was stealing over the city. He hung his hat and his gun belt on the chair next to the bed, took off his coat and hung it in the wardrobe, then stripped off his shirt and string tie, leaving him bare to the waist. When a knock sounded on the door, he went to answer the summons, assuming he'd find a waiter with his supper standing in the corridor. When he swung the door open, he found himself looking into the beautiful, but rather startled face of Catherine Lupo.
Mr. Morgan, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to intrude on you.
It's all right. What can I do for you, Miss Lupo?
Well, I can come back later.
That's not necessary. Go ahead and say whatever it is you came here to say.
All right. But may I come in first?
He stepped back, holding onto the edge of the door.
Sure. Come on in.
Catherine stepped past him and he closed the door behind her. If she wasn't worried about being alone in a hotel room with a man who was stripped to the waist, he wasn't going to worry about protecting her maidenly sensibilities. He turned to face her and found that she was regarding him with a frank stare.
I've thought about it a great deal, and I'm convinced you're the only man who can prove my father wasn't a killer. Accomplishing that means a great deal to me. So I'm prepared to do whatever it takes to persuade you to go along with Captain Hughes' plan.
With that, she reached up and started to unbutton the top button of her blouse.
Wait just a minute. You're saying that you're willing to go to bed with me to get me to do what you want?
For a second, she looked like she wanted to bolt, but he could almost see her spine stiffening with resolve.
That's right.
Miss Lupo, you don't have to do that.
I don't mind, really.
You haven't been to Ranger headquarters since earlier in the day, have you?
No, I've been thinking about what I need to do.
It's not this. I've already told Captain Hughes and Sergeant Culhane that I'll go along with their plan.
Oh. Oh. Then you must think I'm some sort of loose woman.
I think you're a woman who loves her father and wants to clear his name. That's all. At this point, it's the only thing you can still do for him, so it's very important to you. There's no shame in that.
Unable to meet his eyes, she looked down and hurriedly fastened the button she had undone.
I'm not ashamed. I probably should be, but I was desperate.
I understand.
When you opened the door and I saw you standing there like that, I took it as an omen.
I thought you were the waiter bringing my supper. I'm not in the habit of parading around shirtless in front of women I don't really know. I'm sorry for the misunderstanding.
That's all right. I should go. Although you really, don't owe me an apology.
Maybe we'll see each other again before things get started.
Maybe. If not, well, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, Mr. Morgan. I know you're risking your life, and I have no right to ask you to do something like that.
I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't want to.
I know. Still, I appreciate it so much.
That's bound to be my supper this time.
I'll leave you to it, then.
Hold on a minute. You're not worried about your reputation?
The only reputation I'm worried about is my father's, and you're going to help repair that. I've made my peace knowing he was a bank robber. I can live with that. But I don't want people thinking he was a murderer, too.
The kid hoped for her sake that that was how the whole thing was going to turn out. He went to the door and opened it. A waiter in a red jacket stood there all right, with a tray containing several covered dishes in his hands.
The lady was just leaving.
Catherine stepped past him. The waiter moved aside to give her some room. The kid saw the man's eyes widen slightly at the sight of her, but a quick glare from him made the waiter's expression turn neutral again. Catherine turned back to face the kid.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Good night.
Good night.
He jerked a thumb to indicate the waiter should bring in the food. The man stepped inside and placed the tray on a table. He straightened to find the kid had drawn the Mauser from its holster. The sight of the odd-looking but definitely menacing pistol made the man's face turn pale. He swallowed hard as he stared at it. The kid held the gun down at his side. In his other hand, he had a $20 gold piece he had taken from the pocket of his trousers. He held the coin up so the waiter could see it.
Your choice is pretty simple. You can keep your mouth shut about what you just saw and earn yourself this double eagle, or you can spread rumors. If you do, and they get back to me, I'll know who started them. You understand me, amigo?
Yes, sir. I sure do. And that gold piece, it looks mighty nice to me.
I thought maybe it would.
The kid flipped the double eagle toward the waiter, who plucked it deftly from the air.
I'll put the dishes in the hall when I'm through with them.
Yes, sir.
The waiter couldn't leave fast enough. The kid smiled, shook his head, and slid the Mauser back into its holster. The Texas State Penitentiary at Huntsville was ugly as hell, the kid thought, but at least it wasn't a hole in the ground like Hellgate Prison over in New Mexico territory. In Hellgate, the prisoners' cells had been blasted out of the rock itself. The kid had never seen a place any more bleak and depressing. The prison at Huntsville might wind up running it a close second. He rode in an enclosed wagon with small barred windows in front and back. He could see the prison when he looked through the window in front, past Asa Colhane's shoulder. Colhane rode on the seat next to the driver, a shotgun cradled across his lap. Four more rangers, each of them heavily armed, flanked the wagon on horseback. The kid sat on a hard wooden bench, wearing leg irons and manacles connected by a length of chain. He knew he would barely shuffle along when he got out of the wagon.
Well, there it is, Keen. You're home for the next 20 years.
That's good. You ever think about going on the stage, Asa? Becoming an actor?
Well, I reckon you and me ought to team up and go on the stage. I can sing and dance, I might tell a few jokes.
No thanks. Thinking everybody in there think I'm Waco Keen is all the play acting I'm interested in doing.
The other five Rangers with Culhane were in on the plan, of course, and Warden Jennings was expecting them. Other than Captain Hughes and Catherine Lupo back in San Antonio, no one else knew Kid Morgan had taken the place of the late Waco Keen, and that was the way it had to remain. The wagon drew to a halt in front of the prison's main gate. A couple of blue-uniformed guards carrying shotguns came out of a guardhouse to greet Culhane.
Six Rangers? Whoever you've got locked up in that wagon, he must be a ring-tailed terror.
He's a bad hombre, all right.
Culhane handed down some papers to the guard.
Train robber and shootist named Waco Keen.
Yeah, I heard he was coming in. Papers look all right, Casey?
The first guard handed the papers back to Culhane.
Yeah, signal the fellas inside to open the gate.
The second man went back into the guardhouse, and a moment later the big metal gate began rolling back. The ranger handling the team of horses drove through and had to stop again at a wooden gate topped with barbed wire. The guards manning it didn't unlock it and swing it open until the outer gate had closed behind the wagon and its escort. The gates were well guarded, the kid thought. And yet Quint Lupo and the other prisoners had been able to get out through a single sally port leading from the administrative area where the infirmary was located to the outside. During the past week, the kid had gone over every known detail about Lupo's escape with Hughes and Culhane. He wondered if that weakness in the prison security had been addressed since Lupo's escape. The Rangers were directed to the part of the sprawling prison compound where the offices were. The kid supposed the routine varied from prison to prison, but he knew from his time at Hellgate that new prisoners would be processed in, examined by a doctor, issued a convict's uniform, and might even be spoken to by the warden. He figured in his case, that was a pretty safe bet. Warden Jennings would want to have a word with a notorious new convict like Waco Keen. The wagon came to a halt in front of one of the stone buildings.
We can take him from here, Ranger. Just unlock the back of that wagon.
No, sir. I ain't turning this one over to anybody except the warden his own self. He ain't your old run-of-the-mill owl hoot.
Who have you got in there? Second coming of Jesse James?
I reckon he might have turned out to be as bad as old Jesse if the law hadn't got lucky enough to nab him now. Name of Waco Keen.
Yeah, I think I've heard some talk about him. You say you want to hand him over to the warden?
That's right.
Well, I guess it's all right if you stay with him while we're getting him checked in. I'll go let Mr. Jennings know you're here.
Much obliged, son.
The kid felt the wagon shift as Culhane and the driver climbed down from the seat. After Culhane unlocked the door, it swung open, letting more sunlight into the enclosed wagon. The kid had to squint a little against the glare.
Climb on out of there, Keen, and don't try anything or you'll be sorry. So says me and this scattergun.
The layout wasn't that different from Hellgate, the kid saw as he climbed awkwardly out of the wagon and looked around. He supposed most prisons were similar. There was no point in getting fancy to keep men locked up. The wagon was parked in front of a squat stone building, as unappealing as all the other buildings inside the prison. The area housed the offices, the infirmary, the guards' barracks for those who didn't live nearby in the town of Huntsville, storage buildings, and everything else that made the prison a nearly self-sufficient operation. Beyond the area were more fences and walls cutting it off from the prison's main buildings, large, hulking gray structures where the prisoners were housed. The kitchen and the laundry, which were manned by convicts, were there too, and in the center of those buildings was the exercise yard. The Rangers surrounded him, along with three blue-uniformed prison guards wearing stiff-billed black caps. Trying not to overdo it, the kid put a sneer on his face as he looked at them. He hadn't shaved for several days, so brown stubble covered his cheeks.
Follow me, Keen.
The kid didn't move for a second, just long enough to make it clear he wasn't going to jump to obey, then reluctantly shuffled along behind the guard. Having his ankles shackled made him feel like he was about to pitch forward onto his face, and he didn't like it at all. The sensation stirred up bitter memories of the time he'd spent in Hellgate. They went into one of the ugly buildings and along a corridor to a room empty except for a bench along one wall.
You take your clothes off here.
As much as the chain connecting his wrists to his ankles would allow him, the kid lifted his hands to display the iron fetters.
That's gonna be kinda hard.
Don't worry, we'll get him off you.
The guards closed in and cut the kid's clothes off. Of course, the garments weren't actually his. They were rough work clothes the Rangers had provided for the masquerade. The kid was left standing naked except for the chains, and despite the warmth of the day outside, something dank about the stone-walled room made him shiver. One of the guards knocked on a door on the other side of the room, and a moment later it opened to admit a slender man in a white coat. As soon as the kid saw the man's hollow eyes and pale skin, he knew something was wrong with him. He had seen opium addicts before, and he had a hunch he was looking at one now.
I'm Dr. Simon Kendrick. I'm going to examine you now, Mr. Keene.
You don't have to do that. Ain't nothing wrong with me.
I'm afraid it's standard procedure. This won't take long.
The doctor was right about that. The examination was cursory at best, but it was still humiliating, and the kid was glad when it was over. He recalled that Quint Lupo had been taken to the infirmary after a fight in the yard. Someone in the pay of the gang could have started that fight in order to get Lupo removed from the other convicts. Did that mean Kendrick was part of the gang, or at least being paid off by them? A man addicted to opium would certainly be vulnerable to something like that. He would have to keep an eye on the doctor. The only other name he knew was Bert Hagen, who had testified that Lupo murdered a guard during the prison break. For all the kid knew, Hagen could have been one of the blue-uniformed men who had brought him into the building. After the doctor was gone, one of the guards stepped up next to the kid.
All right, take the chains off him.
Culhane handed his shotgun to one of the other Rangers. He wasn't wearing a handgun. He went over to the kid, took a key from his vest pocket, and unlocked the leg irons and manacles. When that was done, Culhane backed off, letting the restraints dangle from his hand. The other Rangers and the three guards had kept the kid covered the whole time Culhane was turning him loose.
You fellas must think I'm loco. An hombre would have to be crazy to try anything with that many guns pointing at him.
You just keep reminding yourself of that, King. You do that and you'll be all right.
A small, ferret-faced convict in a gray uniform brought in a bundle of clothes, including a pair of boots and some socks. The man was one of the trustees. He set the clothes on the bench and left.
That's what I'm supposed to wear?
That's right. They suit you?
I reckon they'll do.
The kid got dressed. The gray uniform was rough and ill-fitting, a far cry from the luxurious clothing Conrad Browning had purchased from the finest tailors in Boston and New York. If some of the men who had sat in the boardrooms with him could see him now, of course, some of those men were probably as crooked as many of the prisoners already locked up, he reminded himself.
All right. The warden ought to be ready for you now. Let's go.
5 minutes later, the kid was in a different building. It was a little nicer, and the kid wasn't surprised to see that it housed the prison's offices. The guard stopped and knocked on a polished wooden door. Gilt letters reading Preston Jennings were painted on it, with the title Warden underneath the name.
Come in.
The guard opened the door and went in first, turning so he could cover the kid. Culhane and the other two prison guards followed, leaving the other Rangers in the hall. The warden's office was simply but comfortably furnished with a rug on the floor, several leather chairs, and a large desk. The window behind the desk didn't command much of a view. A high stone wall rose only a few feet from it. The man standing behind the desk wore a brown tweed suit. He had thinning gray hair and a salt and pepper beard. Spectacles had slid down his nose and were perched on the end.
Ah, this is the new man.
That's right, sir. Waco Keene.
Waco, eh? Is that what your mother named you, Mr. Keene?
It'll do as good as any.
Suit yourself. My name is Preston Jennings. I'm the warden here. I want you to know we allow no troublemaking, but if you comply with our rules, you'll be treated fairly.
The kid didn't say anything, but he hoped Captain Hughes was right about Jennings being trustworthy. If he wasn't, the kid's life wasn't going to be worth a plugged nickel.
Do you understand what I just told you, Mr. Keene?
Yeah, sure.
Very well.
Jennings looked over at Culhane.
I understand you wanted to turn this prisoner over to me personally, Sergeant Culhane.
That's right. My captain told me not to take my eyes off of him until I was sure he wouldn't be able to get away. Now, Keene's a tricky one. If he hadn't had some bad luck, I ain't sure we ever would have caught him.
Well, you can see for yourself he's not going anywhere, Sergeant. You can tell your captain we'll take good care of him.
Yes, sir, I'll do that.
Culhane turned to the kid.
So long, Waco. Don't reckon I'll be seeing you again, but if I do, you can bet I'll be shooting a kill.
Maybe. Unless I see you first, Ranger.
That's quite enough of that. Lawrence, take the prisoner to his cell.
Yes, sir.
The kid and Culhane traded hard looks for a second. Then the guards closed in around the kid and marched him out of the warden's office. He was taken out through a side door and escorted to a heavy wooden gate in the wall. A couple of guards were waiting inside the fence. They were armed with clubs instead of guns. Lawrence handed his shotgun to one of the men who'd come with him before he went through the gate in the fence with the kid. That gate was closed and locked behind them. No guns were allowed beyond that point, the kid guessed. But guard towers with sharpshooters posted in them loomed above the walls. The kid could feel the eyes of those marksmen on him as he walked across the yard with the guards. He might as well have had a bullseye painted on his back. He ought to get used to the feeling, he told himself. It was probably going to be there for a while. The guards escorted the kid into one of the big buildings. There was an open area in the middle with three levels of cells on either side. He was surprised to see most of the cells were empty until he realized that because it was the middle of the day, most of the prisoners were out working, either in the fields or in one of the shops located at the prison. Probably the few men who were in their cells were either sick or had been excused from work for some other reason. About two-thirds of the way along the block, on the first level, Lawrence came to a stop in front of an open cell. He motioned with the club for the kid to go in.
You'll be issued an extra uniform later. One of the trustees will bring it by later along with a blanket for your bunk. Since it's past the middle of the day, you're excused from work, but only for today.
What job are you going to have me doing?
New men work the laundry. That's where they can do the least damage if they decide to act up. Once you've shown you're not going to make any trouble, maybe you can move on to something else.
The kid nodded. He didn't really care what task he was assigned. Hughes had told him it was all right for him to act surly and not eager to cooperate, but to not cause any real trouble. That might delay the gang making their move.
Who's my cellmate?
I'll let the two of you introduce yourselves when he gets back.
The kid had a feeling the guard's comment might not bode well. If he didn't get along with his cellmate, the time he spent in there would get even more challenging. He sat down on the bare mattress. There was nothing else to do. Lawrence closed the cell door. The crash of metal against metal had a terrible finality to it, and for a second, the kid was tempted to call the whole thing off. Then he steeled his resolve. He had agreed to help, and he wanted to keep his word. But if the gang he was after was going to strike again, with him as the target, he hoped they didn't take too long to get around to it. The same ferret-like trustee showed up a while later with the kid's extra uniform and blanket. He handed the items through the small opening in the cell door designed for such things.
I'm Mike Calvert, Keene. You need anything around here, you let me know. If I can't put my hands on it, chances are I'll know somebody who can.
It's like that, is it?
Well, yeah. Within reason, I mean. Don't go asking me for no Gatling gun or anything like that.
All right. No Gatling gun. What are you in for, Calvert?
I don't like to talk about that. I done some bad things. Really bad things. Just soon forget about them.
Calvert looked relatively harmless, but the kid knew how looks could be deceptive, especially in a place such as this.
That's fine with me.
I know why you're here, though. I heard you robbed trains all the way from one end of Texas to the other.
I held up a few trains in my time, yeah?
More than a few, I heard. And you blowed up more than one express car, too.
Well, you have to get the door off the safe somehow, don't you?
You gonna do just fine in here, Keene. You better keep your eyes open, though. Not everybody in here is like me. Some of them you can't trust.
I remember that.
The kid tossed the extra clothes and the blanket on the bunk.
Thanks for bringing those things.
Oh, just doing my job.
Calvert lifted a hand in farewell and scuttled away, reminding the kid more of a rat than a ferret. The kid returned to the bunk to sit and wait some more. He thought about the likelihood Calvert was working with the gang on the outside and had to admit it was possible. Even if Calvert had no connection with the outlaws, he struck the kid as the sort who would gossip and help spread the word about the notorious new convict, Waco Keene. The more of that that went on, the better. Time dragged by, but eventually the afternoon waned and the guards began bringing the prisoners back in from their day's labors. The kid stayed where he was on the bunk when a guard paused outside the door of his cell and unlocked it. The guard stepped aside to let a middle-aged convict walk past him into the cell. The door shut as the prisoner stopped just inside the cell and looked at the kid. He was at least 50, probably older. His gray hair had quite a bit of white in it, as did his mustache. His face was weathered to a permanent tan, which told the kid that he'd worked outside quite a bit. The man didn't have the pallor people usually associated with convicts. He reminded the kid of old cowboys he had seen, men who had punched cows their entire life until they were too stove up to do it anymore.
Nobody told me I was getting a new cellmate today, but I'm glad to meet you anyway, son.
He held out his hand.
I'm John Schofield.
The kid stood up and gripped Schofield's hand.
Waco Keene.
The train robber I've been hearing all that talk about?
Word got around the place that I was coming, huh?
You could say that.
The kid wondered if Jennings had assigned him to this cell so he wouldn't be in with someone who might prove to be a threat. The whole plan hatched by the Rangers would fall apart if the kid was killed or even badly injured by a brutal cellmate.
I've heard that you're quite a train robber.
The railroads and the express companies have plenty of good reasons not to like me.
I can imagine. I also imagine you're curious about me.
I don't believe in prying into a man's personal business.
Oh, it's perfectly all right and understandable as well. We're going to be spending a lot of time together. Of course, you'd like to know what sort of man I am. I used to be a Baptist minister.
Is that so?
Yes, but I had a crisis of faith. I suppose you could say the Lord and I had a falling out. It was prompted by a woman, of course, as such things all too often are. The spirit may be willing, but the flesh is weak. So weak.
I didn't know they put preachers in jail for backsliding.
They don't. They do, however, put preachers in jail who burn down their own churches with the congregation still inside.
Good Lord. Sorry, Reverend, I didn't mean...
That's all right, Waco. Can I call you Waco? I understand how people feel about what I did. It's shocking, especially when you consider I've never committed any other act of violence before or since that day. But I was tormented, you see. Absolutely tormented. And I thought I might be able to cleanse my soul with fire. I fully intended to die right along with the others. I locked all the doors, set the fire in a back room, and climbed to the pulpit to confess my sins before the end. When the congregation smelled the smoke and realized what I had done, some sidewinder in the choir shot me. I didn't know he was carrying a gun under that robe. The men were able to break out some windows, and most of the congregation escaped. Only 10 people died. I'm sorry to say they dragged me outside instead of leaving me there to die, as I would have preferred. But I suppose the Lord still has plans for me. Or at least I would assume he did, if I still believed in him.
Schofield talked like a preacher, all right, the words just flowing out of him like a river. He wore a serene expression the whole time he was talking about the horrible thing he'd done, and the kid could come to only one conclusion. His cellmate was loco. Pure loco.
Thank you for telling me that, John. Must have been rough on you, all right.
Well, I made my peace with it. I may not have burned in the church that day, but I know I'll burn in hell when my time comes.
Wait a minute. I thought you said you didn't believe in God.
I don't.
Then how can you believe in hell? You can't have one without the other, can you?
I believe that you can.
I don't see how.
Look around you.
At this prison?
At this world. If this isn't the anteroom of hell, what else can it possibly be? Think of all the sin and suffering that goes on constantly, the human misery and degradation that's all around us. When people tell me to go to hell, Waco, I tell them there's no need. I'm already there.
The kid felt an unaccustomed chill go through him. Loco or not, John Schofield was friendly and unassuming. Knowing what he did, the kid didn't think he would ever actually like the man, but figured they could get along all right. And since Schofield had been locked up at Huntsville for 17 years, he certainly knew how things worked in the prison. Later that evening, the kid mentioned Ike Calvert, the trustee who had brought him his blanket and extra uniform, and Schofield frowned.
Never trust that little weasel.
He told me he can get just about anything a fella might want.
He probably can, but the price might wind up being more than you'd want to pay. He's an evil man, Waco. I know that after things I've done, I'm not one to be talking, but Calvert, he's truly an agent of the devil.
I'll keep that in mind.
The tables and benches in the mess hall were bolted to the floor. Guards prowled constantly between them, keeping an eye on the prisoners to make sure nobody tried to swipe a spoon that could be used to make a weapon.
They keep a close count on the utensils, bowls, and anything else that might prove to be dangerous. Even if a single spoon turns up missing, we're all searched, and so are our cells, until it's found.
I'll bet fellas manage to steal one every now and then, anyway.
Of course. Every man harbors the desire to commit murder inside him. Some are unable to control it.
Who are some of the troublemakers in here?
Well, there was a man named Boozer, but he was killed in an escape attempt several months ago. He may have been the worst. But nature abhors a vacuum, you know. You understand what I mean?
Whenever something happens to one SOB, another SOB comes along to take his place.
Exactly. There's a man named Cushman who's very bad to cross. He's over there, two tables across and down several seats. The one with the bald head.
The kid could tell which convict Schofield meant. Cushman looked like a bruiser, all right. Big, broad-shouldered, slab-muscled, prematurely bald because he appeared to be a relatively young man. The kid didn't like the looks of him, or of the other men who sat around Cushman, who seemed to be the same brutal sort.
He's bad about starting fights. You'll want to stay away from him as much as possible, Waco.